What do you say we put a little lock on the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and get our weekly guest in here? We like to call it our weekly view from the north. You can find his work for Comcast Sports Net. Check out CSNNW.com. He's talking Ducks on the Tube, Comcast Channel 737. You can follow him on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are you doing today? Fine, sir.
I'm doing well. How are you, man?
Doing great. Kind of, you know, now that football's over, I could kind of delete that part of my hard drive and get psyched for some college hoops and for some NBA. But I want to get to the Super Bowl because, so let's get to 8.5 minutes ago in the third when Ryan hit Coleman on the touchdown pass. It's 28-3. In the Fentress household, were we throwing in the towel or were we anticipating the scintillating comeback?
Well, a friend of mine was over, and he said, I think right when they got the ball down 23, he's like, well, they just score, and they get stopped in the score, and they get stopped in the score, it's a game again. I started laughing. That's a lot of if they do. in the back of my mind, I thought, you know, of course Brady could get hot, but I just didn't think Atlanta could blow it. In a situation like that, the other team has to help you. Like, you can't do it on your own. Brady did not do that on his own. Just like, you know, TCU didn't do it on its own to beat the Ducks in the Alamo Bowl, down 31-0 at one point. The other team has to help. And so sometimes you say to yourself, like, I love to do math on probabilities and things like this and figure out, okay, how much time would it take to do this, X, Y, Z? And you come away thinking, okay, they're going to need some breaks. They're going to need something crazy to happen. And the first crazy thing that happened was on 3rd-and-1, Atlanta runs a pass with 8-something to go, and they get sacked for a fumble.
Unbelievable.
That was the first thing. It's like, first of all, it's 3rd-and-1. You could have been more conservative and just run the ball. And then secondly, your running back just lets a blitzing linebacker go right back by you, and your quarterback's completely unaware of what's going on. He's in the pocket way too long looking to throw the ball on 3rd-and-1, and he takes a sack and fumbles. That's the first thing right there. If that doesn't happen, there's no way they're able to come back because they just won't have enough time. So at that moment is when I thought, okay, now it's game on.
I was watching the game with my son, and he kept correcting the announcers, and along the lines of what you said, they kept saying, come back, come back, come back. He kept countering that with collapse, collapse, collapse.
Exactly. I mean, look, you give Brady credit for when he had the ball, he made plays. I mean, there's no question about that. But, you know, if you're up 28-3, you only need to make a few reasonable plays to ice it just because of time. And then, of course, the last thing, of course, was Julio Jones makes that amazing catch inside the 25. They run the ball in the first down, and the second down, they decide to pass. And they get sacked. All he really needed to do was run the ball 3 times, make them burn timeouts, kick a 41-yard field goal at worst, and the game's over. And instead, they go sack, holding, incomplete, punt, and they give Tom Brady 3 minutes and 2 timeouts. I'm like, oh my God. Even then I tweeted, there's no way. And I knew when I tweeted this, I'm like, okay, this is just wishful thinking on my part. I'm like, there's no way he's driving 92 with DJ receiving because the receivers are pretty average. I didn't think anyone's going to make a big play. There's no way he's going to get a 2-point conversion. And sure enough, he drove down the field and got the touchdown and 2-point conversion. So, no, Atlanta, I blame Atlanta 60% of it. I give Brady 30% and the rest of his team 10.
Nice. So when it comes
to you,
and of course, well, it added up to 100. I'll give you credit there.
I can count.
When it comes to that conversation, when people say who's the best quarterback ever, I'm like, look, let's talk about the best we've seen. Your specific parameters, is it about get guys in the conversation because not every quarterback is in a position to get to 5, 6, 7 Super Bowls. So when you look at Brady's resume, do you think what is your personal barometer and where does he fit in?
You know, a lot of times I think we gravitate toward the person we grew up watching, or, you know, because when you're young, you have sort of a more of a wide eye, like, oh my God, they're so amazing, than you do when you're older.
Right.
So I think we tend to cling to certain things from our past or childhood or whatever that we thought would never be, you know, never be surpassed. You know, people play that game all the time. So I'm a Montana guy. You know, actually, Marino is my favorite quarterback of all time, but I've always said Montana's number one. I don't understand the Elway fascination. I think he's definitely in the, you know, top 10, but the whole him number one thing, I think it's ridiculous. But, you know, I have to be honest. Like, I think Tom Brady, if you take every measurement imaginable, he checks off every box other than he wasn't very mobile, but that didn't matter because he didn't need to be. That's not necessarily a requirement of the position. And I think you have to make him number one. And then I don't think Super Bowl count is everything, because I think, you know, Terry Bradshaw had four and Montana had four, and no one ever said Bradshaw was better than Montana, because clearly Bradshaw threw a ton of interceptions, and their running games were always in the top five. Their defense was always top five, if not number one. So he always had amazing help around him. I think he played with, you know, 13 other Hall of Famers or something ridiculous like that. So no one's ever had Bradshaw one, and he had four. No one's even had Bradshaw two or three or five or whatever. He had four Super Bowls. So it's not all about that, but clearly Brady has done everything you could ever imagine. He was a game manager, won Super Bowls. He set NFL passing records, won Super Bowls. He had an undefeated regular season. I mean, he just amazing comebacks. And then what he did to just ice it like that with 466 yards, that's insane for a Super Bowl game. And to rally them like that was just phenomenal. So I think, to be fair, no matter what your bias are, and I do not like the Patriots at all, I think I've rooted against them in every Super Bowl, is you have to just say honestly that Tom Brady deserves to be called the greatest ever.
I think also when you ask Brady down the road about this Super Bowl, he'll brag about his team-high 15-yard run over.
That was crazy. You're at 840 for 15 yards. That was crazy.
Or as my friend likes to say, the Brady scramble day two. Let's talk some Trailblazers. They had that great win the other night in Dallas on the McCollum shot. We talked a few weeks ago about kind of where they were in comparison to last year. They're actually three games worse. But my question would be, are they back in that NBA hell where they were in the early to mid 2000s, where they're not a contender, but they're not bad enough to get an impact draft pick?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's why, for their sake, I wanted them to stink last year. Like, last year was the year they were supposed to stink. You know, get a top five pick and then spend some cap room, but you hopefully land another player of the caliber of McCollum or Lillard with that pick. But that didn't happen, so then you go the other route where you try and maximize your cap space, get a bunch of assets, and hope you can make a trade at some point. But, yeah, they're in that space where, you know, not only this year, they might not even make the playoffs, but if they don't make the playoffs, they're going to end up with still a 13th pick or something, or 12th pick, which is not going to be a great pick. I mean, you can still hit there. Obviously, I think McCollum was 12th or 11, 12, or 13, somewhere in there, 14. So you can still hit on a guy, but you're not getting that obvious high pick, you know, franchise-changing guy. And the fact that they may not make the playoffs is extremely disappointing because of their payroll, obviously. But it's all about a trade with them. I mean, there's no way in hell this roster is going to ever come close to contending for anything. I thought it was funny that Lillard was saying that, you know, they're going to try and make it to the Western Conference Finals, and that was based largely on the fact that they went to the second round last year, which, if anyone's being honest, everyone knows that was BS because the Clippers lost their two best players in that series after blowing out Portland twice by 20 points. They have to make a deal. They have to make a trade. They have to do something to get another stud in there. I personally don't believe Lillard's a true number one on a contender. I don't. McCollum's not either. So they need to get another number two to go with him as a two, and McCollum's a three, and then maybe you have something working there. Or they need to try to find a true number one. And by number one, a number one guy to me is like, you don't miss the playoffs with that guy.
Sure.
People used to always call Kevin Love a number one. I'd be like, no, he never made a playoff with the Timberwolves. There's no way he can be number one. Duncan's a one. Kobe's a one. LeBron, Wade, that caliber to me is completely different than the next year guys who just put up big numbers, but they don't necessarily win. So they're going to have to make some type of deal somehow. You know, I don't know what it's going to be, but if they don't, they're just going to be right in that 35 to 45 wins for the next 10 years until Lillard retires.
I know, and it, like we call it, it's basketball purgatory. There's really no hope, but you're not bad enough to get the impact guy. And with this Turner injury, I know it's all speculation, but you're there in Portland. I mean, you know, Jason Quick, you're on the TV with him. I mean, is there any rumors? Is there any they're going after this guy, or is it just it's 2 weeks from now? Who the hell knows? We'll see.
There's nothing concrete out there, really. I mean, Cousins' name keeps coming out with a lot of different teams, but his attitude is horrible. And Sacramento, I don't think, just wants to just give him away for a bunch of pieces. Like, I don't think they trade him to Portland for, you know, Crabbe, Myers Leonard, and Noah Vonleh. Like, what good does that do them? I think they're going to try. They want to get a star for him. But who would give up a star for a star who's got an attitude problem? Like, that wouldn't make any sense. No one would do that. So, you know, I think Kevin Love's intriguing, but there's talk about him, you know, starting to develop having a bad back. Of course, you would never trade for Carmelo. That would be just stupid. There's no way you can do that. And now they can get Whiteside from Miami. If Miami decides, you know, this isn't working out, we're not going to win, let's just get rid of him, maybe. But what do you have to give Miami that Miami's going to want? Because all your guys are on their first year of their contract. So, you know, if someone takes Crabbe from you, they're stuck with him for 3 more years at, what, $18 million a year? Like, that's not attractive.
That's a big deal.
It's really a tough situation that they're in right now. And it's got to be deciding for Blazers fans, because last year it was the young, plucky team that came out of nowhere and made the playoffs, and Vegas said they were going to win 26 games. I said they were going to win, like, 19. And now they're the overpaid, you know, guys who refuse to play anything resembling defense. And, you know, a big deal for them is that they got a game-winning shot against Dallas, which stinks, and Dallas beat them at home a couple days ago. So it's a very tough situation for them to be in.
Let's get to Oregon football as we continue with Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sports Net. I always like your preseason previews position by position. But you made kind of a special note looking at the receivers and tight ends. I think it makes sense with the trio that's gone, Jaylen Brown transferred. So you're thinking the guys who just got here, the new recruits, they've got a shot to maybe contribute right off?
I think they're going to have to, because there's only four scholarship receivers remaining, unless I'm forgetting someone. I don't think I am. But, you know, obviously you got Nelson and Carrington are going to start, and then Afadale and Dylan Mitch will battle for that third receiver spot when they're playing for the receiver offense, and then the other one will be the fourth. And then after that, you know, there's no one else on scholarship other than the four freshmen coming in who are receivers, and then you have Judson, who's an athlete who will probably play slot or something like that. The history of Oregon football is that a couple guys are going to get hurt. A receiver seems to be the thing. I mean, this past season we saw Allen go down in Stanford. We've seen Braylon Addison get hurt. We've seen Allen get hurt before that. Josh Huff was at least banged up a little bit. He missed a little bit of time here and there. I think, who else? What's his face? I can't remember.
Dylan Mitchell?
Someone else. Who?
Did you mention Dylan Mitchell?
I mentioned just Dylan Mitchell as one of the four.
I'm trying to think of other
receivers in the past who've gotten hurt. It seems like every year a couple guys go down, you have to rely on someone else. So odds would say that if you have four guys coming back that you like, that one or two are going to get injured, and then you're going to have to turn to freshman to fill that void. I would say that Jacob Breland is a guy who is such a good receiving tight end that maybe he could actually be de facto number five receiver. But he's also going to be your starting tight end probably, right? So you can't really do that either. So it's going to be an interesting situation. But I would think, you know, out of five guys, that two would emerge to at least be equipped enough to be a number five or number six receiver on this team.
All right, let's wrap with Duck Hoops after that demolition of Arizona on Saturday. You know, they're one of the co-leaders. They've got the tiebreakers. They play the Bruins tonight. I know this sounds kind of simple, and you touched on it, but the game on the road, I mean, suddenly it's like that's where they're going to have to prove themselves, that we know what the home winning streak is like. If they're going to achieve what everybody thinks they can, they're obviously going to have to be somewhat of a road warrior.
Yeah, I mean, I'm nitpicking a little bit, I admit, but, you know, they don't have an impressive road win at all, and you know, they blew out Arizona, and that was obviously impressive. The UCLA game, they kind of got lucky at the end at home. I would like to see them, just for the sake of just having checked it off the box, them going on the road and beating a really good team, a ranked team, like a UCLA. They did beat Utah. That was a solid win, but this would be better. And even USC, you know, would be that's a 20-win team already. That could be a strong win as well. And, you know, my negative Nelly part of me comes out and just says, hey, you know, yeah, they blew out Arizona, but, man, they almost lost Arizona State. and they lost to Colorado. Those are two bottom feeder teams in this conference. So there's still, you know, to me, there's still some trepidation about this team, regardless of the margin of victory against Arizona, because you can't expect to shoot 60% from three every night. Like, that's just not going to happen. So, yeah, I would like to see them come together on the road and win this game, and then close out strong and win the regular season title. If they do that, then I think that sets the table for another strong postseason for them.
So you're not counting the win in Seattle against a 2-9 Husky team as an impressive road win?
I am not. I just cannot. You know, at the time it looked good, but nah. Hey, one quick note. So, Fox Sports is reporting that Marcus Arroyo is going to be the new passing game coordinator. I just confirmed that with someone at Oregon that he is going to be the guy to replace Reeves.
What, you know where he's from?
He was at Cal in Tampa.
Oh, okay. No, Marcus Arroyo. There you go. Now we got something.
Former assistant in California, Angus with Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's all I know at the moment. I just literally just confirmed it, like, while I was on the radio with you, and I'll go home and post something on it.
Awesome. Good stuff. This just in. You catch up with Mr. Fentress, of course, CSNNW.com. Catch him on the tube talking Ducks and on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Great stuff as always, sir. You have a terrific weekend, and we'll catch up next week.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Take it easy.